All right, let's begin the Planning and Community Development Committee meeting for Monday, June 7th, 2021. And we'll start out with the business agenda. Arel Korovich, everyone.
Kathy, we can't hear you.
Do I need to be closer? Okay. Maybe I'll mess with my volume somewhere. Okay, so if I link, you can hear.
Ah, you're kind of fading in and out. It's weird.
Is not if everyone else is hearing that? Yes? No? Should I go out? I'm going to go out and come back in. So just give me a minute.
Kathy, can I suggest, Brandon, can you mute right now while if everybody mutes while somebody's talking, that might help.
Okay. Sharon? Thank you. Tom? I'm trying to see. And then, okay. Now, is it better? Okay. So that hopefully that's all that was. Okay. So my request is that we move item C up above item B. And I'll explain why when I tee it up. It has to do with the time sensitivity of that topic. I want to make sure we get it thoroughly vetted. So, and we have time to do that. So is there consensus amongst my two fellow council members to move item C to the second item on the agenda? All right. Thank you very much. So then now we'll start with item A, which is an application for lodging tax funds for Rugby 7 sponsorship. Brandon, take it away.
Thank you. For the record, Brandon Miles, business relations manager and lodging tax staff person. Before you tonight is a funding request for us to sponsor the Rugby Sevens national tournament, which is going to be held at Starfire Sports in August. So Rugby Sevens is 7-a-side versus 15-a-side. The Washington Athletic Club is the defending champion, and so we've been working with them on partnerships. And this is the first to kind of bear fruit to do a sponsorship with them. So this would be the first time the event will be held since COVID. We're looking at teams coming from throughout the region. It's a great opportunity for us to make sure that we get our hotel rooms first priority, and so that people don't go to Renton or other adjacent cities to book. The Lodging Tax Committee unanimously supported this, and we're asking that it go to the next consent agenda for final action by the council. Happy to answer any questions that the committee members might have.
Okay, I'll start with Verna.
No questions. This is what we have LTAC dollars for, so I'm fine. Thanks.
All right, Tom?
Yes, I am for this. I do want to ask, what level of competition or age bracket is this? I never heard of the Rugby Sevens.
So Rugby Sevens is very popular. It's been growing. You see it in the international stage. This will be men's and women's competitive divisions. So the Washington Athletic Club, I would say a lot of their players actually play on the Seattle Seawolves as well. So it's not professional, but it is very competitive, and this should be men's and women's. We are hoping to also get a youth component to be brought in at the same time as well.
Okay, thank you. No, I'm supportive of this.
All right. Thank you, Tom. So the recommendation is here that the staff approve the funding request and forward the request to the consent agenda for our next regular meeting, June 21st?
Correct.
Head nods? Okay, we're good. So I'm going to, we're going to go to item C, and I'm going to tee this up just a little bit first. Let me get to that page. So this is, as you recall, House Bill 1220 passed, and so there are requirements that go along with that and next steps. And so in order to be able to, as a city, be able to have some city legislation around this ordinance of ways that we want to have this implemented, we have to have all that done by the 30th of September. And that includes, is it SEPA? More, Nora, you can nod, SEPA review? Yeah, okay. So, and it has to go through Planning Commission. So what I'm hoping is that we can get all our questions answered today in committee so we can move it forward and keep it moving. So that's why I wanted to move it up to make sure we had time to have a full discussion about it. And so, Nora, would you like to, you're the one who's going to present on this?
Okay. I am. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, so Nora Gerloff, Community Development Director, and thank you for teeing this up. So this is a response to some state legislation that's been passed. And, you know, I think the idea was trying to sort of create a level playing field to deal with our housing and homelessness crisis. And so rather than sort of the patchwork of where things are, you know, shelters and supportive housing are allowed in different jurisdictions, it's sort of setting a common common standard, which is very, very broad. And so, you know, I'll walk through the bill, but then we'll have some suggestions for the areas where I think we do have the opportunity for some local control. And I was hoping to get some feedback, one on the priority of this issue, which I think I'm hearing some about already, and then two about some of the ideas I put out there and any other ideas that you might like to see in an ordinance as it moves forward. So the first section of the bill is talking about adding some additional requirements to our housing element for our comprehensive plan. There was also some funding that was supposed to go along with this, which I understand hasn't happened. So this may or may not be a requirement when we get to that point. In any case, I think it's really building on some of the work we've done on our housing action plan, and we'll figure out what the specific requirements are that we need to consider as we get further along the next year or two. The big part of this bill is, you know, sections 3 and 4, where they're talking about shelters as well as transitional and permanent supportive housing. So, you know, shelters are the someone's coming in off the street in an emergency situation. Transitional housing is something that's a little longer term. You know, probably Stacy would be able to give you a little more detail about it, but it's intended to be a little more, a little longer term than a shelter, maybe a little more secure, but also all intended for people to get the services they need and then they'll be moving on to something. And then permanent supportive housing would be housing. It might be, you know, for veterans or for some particular population, but in general, it's housing for people who will need ongoing services. And so it's a permanent housing. People, they're not under any pressure to leave at any particular point. They could stay there for years and continue to receive those services they need in that environment. So Tukwila really doesn't define or regulate transitional and permanent supportive housing. We treat them as multifamily, and we don't have any particular siting or regulations around that. Shelters, we do. We do allow shelters in a number of our zones, but they're very narrowly drawn, and that's a thing that would have to change under this ordinance. And so the way that this is written is to say that if you have decided that certain zones are permissible for dwellings, houses, apartments, or for hotels or motels, that you're saying that if people can pay, that use is permitted in this zone. And so I think the point was that you shouldn't exclude people who are doing these same types of activities, living there, staying for short term, based on their economic status. So I think that's kind of the logic that underlies this regulation. So, and I apologize that the use table that I reference in here is not included in your packet. I can quickly show that for you if that would be helpful. Let's see. Share my screen here. The short answer is that that basically talks about all of our zones. All right, are you able to see? So we have all of our uses are listed in a table that's in our zoning code, and it's too small for you to see probably, but across the top are all of the zones in the city. And then I've pulled out the use line for dwellings, for hotels and motels, and for shelter. And as you can see, there's permitted uses for one or two of those zones or uses across all of our zones. So pretty much there are no zones that would not be subject to these regulations. So then they've also put in some regulations that say you can't adopt a moratorium to get around this. You can't adopt an interim ordinance, because I think that's, you know, what some people might jump to. There's some definitions we would need to be consistent with. And then they're asking us to look at our accessory dwelling unit regulations. And this is a may, not a shall. So it's suggesting some ways that we could expand or remove restrictions from the use of accessory dwelling units. And again, if and when we get back to updating our ordinance in that area, we would look at those to see if those were applicable to Tukwila. So as Chair Hogarty had mentioned, there is a timeline associated with this work. While there's not a penalty for not adopting these, our regulations would just be invalidated if someone were to apply for something that was not permitted under our current regulations that were preempted by the 1220. And, you know, there's, if we did want to have some of these local control items and we didn't get them in place in time, someone could come in with an application and become vested prior to their being enforced. So I've laid out a schedule that would get us to adoption by September. It's pretty brisk. Basically, we start tomorrow and, you know, march through this. You know, the downside is there's really not much time for outreach other than sort of our basic process of holding hearings and getting the word out that way. We can do a little more outreach, but there's not time for, you know, spending three meetings at the Planning Commission really digging down into some of these details. If we wanted to get it approved in time, we need to make sure that we're providing a clear ordinance, that we've done as much research as we can fit into this time, and keep it moving forward for this time. So that, given that, one of the last things I was doing in Shoreline before I came here was also siting a shelter for homeless single adults. And so we'd had the experience of walking through a number of different regulations and different ways of trying to make sure that that shelter, which the city council was supportive of, but wanted to make sure that it was a good fit for the area and the neighbors and avoiding clusters of like facilities. So looking at that and looking at some regulations that other cities have put in place before, I came up with a list of things that the council may want to consider. I discussed these with the city attorney, and she also felt that these were kind of well within our realm of local control. And so I don't know if you want to have questions about these, want to walk through each one. I'll follow your lead on how you'd like to proceed.
So the bottom of page 21, the 1 through 8, there's one on the next page. This is the kernel of the whole thing of where we're making our decision. So these are the regulations that we can put on, as long as we get them done before the 30th of September, that would, that I'll tell you how I feel about it, that would really make this into something that could be very positive. If we have all the, if we look at these different, consider each of the topics of things that we might want to regulate, because you can see that it includes good neighbor agreements, lots of communication. And I would recommend that we take these one by one. And you, Nora, you go through each one. So this is, yes. Oh, Verna.
Yeah. Can we just back up just real quick? So all these, so the beginning, you know, sections 1 and sections 2, that's going to be in comprehensive plan updates. Sections 3 and 4 is where the meat of this really is. I think Stacy is here. So when you're talking, is permanent, is the way back in considered permanent supportive housing, or is that transitional housing? Just out of curiosity.
Good evening, council members. It is considered transitional housing. And the way we define that typically in social services is 30 to 90 days is shelter. Over 90 days, typically up to 18 months, is considered transitional. And typically we have folks go from shelter that then they graduate into transitional, and they are receiving supportive services along the way. And then once they graduate from transitional, then they are fully restored to be independent and in mainstream housing. Now that looks different, of course, with supportive housing. And supportive housing takes folks who are homeless and acts as a shelter and transitional and permanent housing all in one, with very intensive on-site case management and supportive services. But as Nora said, it is, people could be there for 3 months, 6 months, they can be there for 7 years and and continue to be successful and have and live independently with those supportive services in place.
Great. Thank you. That's perfect. I just wanted to understand the different things. Okay. And so
you're muted.
Yeah, we lost your hat somehow.
Sorry, I just turned myself off because Stacey stopped talking. Sorry. It's a Monday. So that timeline where you're talking SEPA notice, public comment, SEPA determination, the ordinance to the ordinance. So then these things that we're going to go one by one, those are things that would be in that ordinance along with the definitions changes and all of that, right?
Any of those things that you're interested in or other things that you might bring up.
Okay, good. Now I have an understanding. Great. All right. Sorry. Go ahead, Kathy.
So let's do that. Tom, do you have any questions about things before we start digging into these 8 items? I should have asked that. Do you, any comment about the ADU? You might have a question about that, what we're doing with that right now, or what the plan is with that. That might be a good question to ask.
Can you hear me? I didn't fully understand the ADU section about what the policies could include, but I think what Nora said helps. This is a may and not a shall. So that's a helpful statement. I guess one thing I want to ask, Nora, this seems like a really big lift. And so do you have enough resources to accomplish this task? And another question would be, does this slow the permit processing down because you're busy working on this?
I think I'm going to be doing the majority of work on this one so as to not delegate it to people who are working on permits. It will be busy, but I think it's also important. So I guess that's why I'm checking for your priorities as well here.
Okay. So that was my initial questions, and I'm ready to go through the 8.
Okay. So Tom, why don't you start then first with, we're going to go through them, and then Tom and Vernon, do you want to go through each one and ask questions? Maybe we should do it that way. So go through one, we'll ask questions.
So the definition of shelter that is in the RCWs is very broad. I think we may want to think about what types of shelters. I don't think we can necessarily exclude shelters. I think that we would want to encourage shelters where people are admitted and are staying in their 24/7 versus the kind of shelter where people are, you know, shuffling out with their belongings every morning and needing to find a place to be. I think that that's not the best thing for the people who are seeking help, and also not, you know, can create some problems in the neighborhood. So unless we hear otherwise, and again, the 1220 language is pretty broad, it seems like we could define shelters in this way, not the population served, but the services that are offered that way. The other issue that we may also want to put in here is that the services are offered to the people who are residents rather than being services offered to, you know, the larger community, again, who would be coming and going and maybe, you know, not have a place to stay, that be drawn to the area, not have a place to stay that night, and then be at sort of loose ends. So trying to have a bit more controlled environment, and again, I think a more secure secure and effective way for people to transition out of homelessness.
Okay, so questions, and also, are you willing to pass this through? We're not approving this, we're passing this through to be considered by the Planning Commission and then the Council. So Tom, do you have questions or are you willing to pass this one through to the Planning Commission?
I have a question. On number one, it says require that appropriate services for the shelter population are provided. Who determines what those appropriate services are?
I think what we'd be just saying is that some models say other people can come by and have a hot meal or a shower that are not residents of that. I think we're just saying that whatever services are offered there are offered to residents rather than drop-ins. And I think we could word that more clearly.
Thank you. I yield back.
Verna.
No, I mean, and that makes sense to me. So I'm fine with this one. This one makes sense.
Okay, so we'll do them one at a time. We'll pass this one over to the Planning Commission.
So that's where this is going next, right? This is going to the Planning Commission?
Right.
Then it'll come back here, then it goes to full council. Gotcha. Okay, yep, this one's good.
Okay, number two, good neighbor agreement. Nora.
So this is really dealing with things outside of the shelter. How is the shelter interfacing with the neighborhood? This is talking about if they have a smoking area, which they probably will, where is that located? Is it put in a place that will maybe keep it away from the neighbors a little bit? What about litter? How is parking going to be handled? So more sort of external issues with the shelter, just having people have an opportunity to express their concerns and work out something, an agreement with how the shelter would operate.
Okay, Verna, thoughts?
No, it makes sense to me. And I actually went and looked up that good neighbor agreement and that I like what I'm seeing there. So I'm fine with that.
Tom?
If the standards aren't being met, how is this enforced or taken care of?
I mean, that's something that could be put into that agreement. You know, usually it's sort of a dispute resolution process or there's probably not a lot of teeth, but the idea is you set expectations at the outset.
I'm all for the expectations at the outset, but what if they're constantly really loud late at night? And what are the neighbors supposed to do or what is their recourse?
Same that would be if it were an apartment complex that was not well run and, you know, they would probably call the neighbors call the police about a noise complaint. I think we'd handle it in the same way.
Okay. Okay, at this point, it's okay to go forward.
Okay, so we'll send that one on. And your comment, Tom, is how do we enforce or your thoughts about enforcing? Okay, so number three is proximity to transit.
And so just recognizing that this population served by shelters and some of the supportive housing is very transit-dependent population, that they would have a greater chance of success if sited with easy access to transit to make it easier for them to work, seek services, go about their business.
Okay. Verna.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. It makes a lot of sense to me that it should be within a bus or rail stop, light rail or whatever. I think that's critical, so I'm good with that.
Thank you. Tom?
On the distance of a half mile, what if it's 3/4 mile? That wouldn't work. Would we want the wording to say they'd be located under a mile?
Yeah, I mean, that's, this is the kind of decision-making process. I think in transit, they usually look at half a mile as being easily walkable for most people. A mile can become a barrier, depending on what your other options are, honestly. So, we're open to picking the right number.
I'm not hung up on that. I just wanted to ask. It can go forward.
Sure. Cool.
Hey, the question that I have, Nora, is that it would be a quarter of a mile as you walk it, not as the bird flies.
We can certainly put that language in.
That's something that Metro has been doing. They have changed all of their quarter mile, half mile things to walkability, not just the direct circumference line.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So pass that one through. And are you guys good with the quarter mile of walking?
What happened to the half mile?
Says half.
Half mile.
Yep.
I want it to be like right next door, right? That's the next thing I'm going to say. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to go 3/4 and you just slipped in a quarter mile.
Okay, so half mile in travel walking. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that one is going to go through as well. Code of conduct, Nora.
So this is more about what happens internally to the shelter. And so it's an agreement that each resident would make with the shelter operator. And it talks about just expectations of behaviors. It could be, keeping your things in your room and not a common area. You know, obviously it could be no drinking or drug use on site, no threats of violence, just ways for, again, within the shelter to set those expectations for resident behavior. What are you need to meet certain amounts of behavior for us to be able to help you in this facility.
Okay, Tom.
I have two thoughts. One is, again, back to enforcing. So they have these code of conduct. How are they enforcing? But maybe we leave that up to them. But would women in this shelter feel safe? What assures gender safety?
And so those are really things that the operator would need to develop. And it's hard to, this would be, could be a wide variety. It could be single gender shelters. It could be mixed gender. It's just trying to come up with a rule that says for whatever population you're serving, develop rules so they can live in community together safely. And those would probably vary depending on the population.
Yeah, I think I would want it to go towards a pathway that anyone felt safe there, mm-hmm. even if it was mm-hmm. a single female that
right.
felt safe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so, I go back.
Okay, Verna.
Well, and I think the thing goes for, single males, right? I mean, anybody, right? I mean, I think everybody and anybody needs to feel safe. There's some pretty scary women out there
mm-hmm.
who can be very threatening to men. And I'm it's funny, but I work in immigration law and I do a lot of work with domestic violence cases, VAWA cases. And you'd be surprised at how many men are victims as well. So I think it should just be general. People should feel safe. You know, and my thought on this one, you know, if we can legally do that, if that is something that the city can legally do, then I don't have a problem with it.
And it's my understanding that legal has looked at these 8 items. They've given it a preview.
Okay. They have. And, which isn't to say that the city couldn't ask for something when we're negotiating code of conduct that wouldn't be legal, but in general, the premise of that agreement is okay.
Okay. All right. So then the next, and so we're good with that. Spacing, that is the next one.
And so this idea of not overwhelming any given location or neighborhood with a cluster of facilities that at least starting off our thoughts with having a separation between these, again, that's something that as we gain more experience with this over time, we might decide that a different number is the right number. Just kind of throwing a number out there that maybe a mile between these different types of facilities might be a good starting spot.
Okay, so Verna?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine with me as long as there's nothing in the actual bill that would preclude us from doing that. That's fine. I'm fine with that. And you're right. I mean, we don't have to necessarily say 1 mile is the number, but I'm fine with the premise.
Okay, great. Tom.
So on the wording here, a mile doesn't seem like very far to me. I almost would want it to be farther. But if they were on each bank of a river and you couldn't cross the river, I might be comfortable with that. So I don't know how you, or the freeway was a divider. You know, if there's a really strong deterrent, even if they were just three blocks apart or something, you know. So I'm not sure how you change that. Or word, just a mile on walking on the road doesn't seem like very far to me. That could be the light rail station, and then down by the mosque, maybe. Is that about a mile?
It's about three quarters of a mile from Tukwila Village to the light rail station.
Okay, so if you have another quarter of a mile down, maybe by that wooded area, that and the light rail, that would be 1 mile. That would seem a little close to me. So maybe I would want to rethink the distance there. But again, if there was a I-5 went between them, I might not care that they were close.
And the only real guidance we have in the ordinance is it says we can't adopt things which would preclude a reasonable number, or the number that commerce might decide is appropriate for, you know, our area, which is pretty squishy. So I think it, all the cities will probably be looking at, you know, what seems reasonable to them, and then seeing if we get told otherwise.
What if we only, you know, we have a house, rental housing that's divided into four sections. What if we only allowed one per section?
We could certainly go with something like that, and there's nothing right now to say that that might be more. I guess, Stacy, if we're looking at existing facilities that would qualify as, I guess we did decide whether we were only applying this to shelters or we were also applying it to the housing components, because that might give us different numbers.
So the concept of spacing, if we forward this with just saying we want to have the concept of spacing, but then the how is to be determined. Would that be okay for you, Tom and Verna, to forward it saying, yes, we want the concept of spacing that out? Certainly, we're not going to solve that right here, right now. Does that sound okay? So, Nora, you would know that and figure out how you're going to word that? Or did Tom, Verna, did you want a specific number for now? Which would you prefer?
Go ahead, Tom. I'll jump in.
Well, I mean, I might also throw in there that, you know, we have our city broken into quarters for our rental housing. I mean, if we said we wanted this spaced out so maybe there was no more than one per quarter at a maximum, or there was a distance tied to it, I'd like to articulate that in some way to give a little bit of boundaries. If the main criteria is just that it can't be any more than a mile away, seem like they could be open to quite a few of them. We could kind of overload a sector of our city.
Verna? Yeah, I think, you know, hear me? Am I on? Oh, I thought I was muted. So, you know, my thought is that I don't want to be prescriptive right now, because first of all, I think we need to figure out, because I know we have shelters and transitional housing in our city now. And I'd like to get an idea of what we have and where we have it before we start putting limitations on what could be where, right? Because looking at the other criteria that we just talked about, I think it's going to be in maybe one or two general areas, maybe. I don't know that, but I just don't feel comfortable even giving like a mile or 2 miles or until we know what we're dealing with, right? I think it's a little premature. I think I'm fine passing this on with a notion that we like to see that and then talk about spacing. So that's where I'm at. I'd like to see what we have, where it's at, and then look at like, okay, well, where could it possibly, you know, where could we add, and is what would we do about that? I just don't feel comfortable putting a number on it right now, because I think that would just restrict us. Because what happens, right? I mean, I don't know where everything is, but what happens if we have two right now? They're like less than a mile together. So then we'd be in violation of our own thing, right? So that's my clunky way of saying what I'm thinking.
Thanks, Rona. So Stacy, I'm going to give you a chance to speak after Tom. It looks like you might have something to say. So Tom, go ahead.
Well, to Verna's point, can we find out somewhere in this process here where it comes back to how many we do have and where they're at? So I think right now we're having this discussion void of that information, and that might be helpful also.
Thank you, Tom. Stacy, you've got some insight for us?
Well, kind of tapping on what both Tom and Council Member Seale talked about, and that's how we're defining things, housing like clean and sober housing that are run sometimes by a religious or a spiritual organization. We're talking about transitional individual houses like Way Back In. We're talking about multi-family, single adult, but it's single adult, so an apartment complex that has supportive services that houses folks who have previously been long-term homeless and have co-occurring behavioral health disorders. So what do you really want to quantify by this? Because we have a broad range of unique housing situations, and do you want to consider those in the shelter transitional and long-term supportive housing?
Those are good questions.
Mm-hmm. I have a process question. So now I'm looking at right above these at our date. So while the SEPA notice of application is going through, we could get some information for that, right, Nora? Because you got a couple of weeks there. Since this one is, we're getting a little bogged down on this one, which is it. They're all really important, and this is really important. So mm-hmm. could getting us some information, during that time so that because when the time comes and we have to make decisions, it would be great, the more information we had, the more quickly we're going to be able to make that decision, because we have to make these quickly. So as much data, information, mm-hmm. whatever we can get, it's going to be really, really helpful. And so so can I ask my fellow council members again what your specific asks were, or Stacy, what you, I'll start, whoever wants to raise their hand, what we should be asking regarding this. Stacy, did you want to do, okay, Tom, what's our Tom?
Well, how many shelters do we have? How many transitional houses do we have? Just in where? I guess I'd like to know what is our current inventory of such, and whatever Stacy can provide us will be helpful.
Okay.
And if I'm remembering correctly, some of these places are somewhat confidential, right, Stacy? And so it's going to be a little tricky.
Well, that's something I appreciate your mindfulness around that, because many of the houses that we have in the community look like regular houses. And the neighbors don't even know that they're transitional. We don't have confidential unless it's been a name change. So with the domestic violence piece. So, but we like to be really sensitive to the residents who are living there and living in our community as residents, and their children go to our schools, and not have a label or an identifying disparity that some people would consider a disparity against that property or that house, or any negatory or negative attention that could come from revealing address.
Could we do something like this? What I don't want to see is a map with pinpoints. That's what I'm not looking for. Maybe something like, we have X number of transitional houses, I don't know. There's got to be a way to do this without, like you said, it's, yeah.
Okay. Tom.
Could you take a neighborhood map and say, for instance, in Allentown there's two, in Ryan Hill there's one, and is that too descriptive to know it that way?
Well, you may not want to have spacing requirements around a domestic violence person in a single family house that's not, you know, receiving other services. That may not be the thing that requires spacing. I think you might want to define your shelters as the spacing as applies to maybe something that's bigger than a fourplex or something like that.
That's a great point. Maybe the spacing needs to be around, like, and I don't know again what this magical number is, but if it has X number of units or X number of whatever, then we would look at that spacing.
That if it's small enough scale, that may not be a concern.
Right. So again, I think that's kind of arbitrary, but that's more what I think I'm trying to get at.
Okay. So the logistics of this question and coming back to us, I'm going to work with Nora on that. You took notes, right? I didn't do that, Nora. And we'll talk about that. And again, the reason is that we just need to keep this process moving. And this sounds like one that we are is a little bit more complex than the other ones. And we are, you know, we spent some time on it. So I'll get back to you, Nora, and we can brainstorm that. And you can talk to people and get some ideas and figure out how to proceed next.
I would say that we'll need to have a placeholder regulation if we're going to move forward with SEPA. So we'll need to say something about, you know, the city is considering an ordinance that has these elements, including a spacing element, you know, and we'll need to say something about it, you know, regulations to be refined through the Planning Commission process, but something that's in there in order, again, so we can start working on this tomorrow.
We, Nora, if we just leave it like it is, or should we give you direction to just have something regarding spacing and we've given you enough information? Actually, that's a question for us, Verna and Tom. Because we got to put something in there.
Right. And I think what Nora just said would work, right? Subject to blah, 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 subject to, yeah, I don't think we have to put a number in, or do we?
We don't. And we can, you know, SEPA is supposed to happen early in the process while things are still being sorted out. So it's fine if things get refined as you go through. It's expected. What you don't want to do is come up with something new out of left field that you haven't disclosed at the earlier notice period.
Okay, so you'll just reword that so that it says that there will be some sort of spacing between each shelter.
Yeah.
And then we also need to decide, is shelter housing or permanent supporting housing, you know, there's only one of those that's allowed in each space.
And I guess the question is it only, you know, the sort of more intensive homeless shelters that we're concerned about, or are we also looking at, right now we don't have any regulations that require spacing between different types of transitional or supportive housing. So it's worked out okay for us so far. I think the thing that we don't have in the city are these dedicated larger scale homeless shelters.
Okay, so reach now it's shelters. And so I'm looking for head nods from Tom and Verna that we'll keep it at shelters.
All right. And we defined it to be not a single family domestic violence type shelter.
Okay. All right. The next one is the maximum size of a shelter or emergency housing facility. So this is for both. So what this is, tell us about this.
So I'm not sure how often this might come into play, but is the idea that we would like to have some sort of maximum size for each. You know, I'd say looking around at other regulations, somewhere between 75 and 100 was sort of a common cutoff period where they thought for any given shelter that was sort of as big as they thought it could get and be a manageable type of facility. So something to think about if we wanted to impose that sort of limit.
Okay, thank you. Tom?
I don't have a thought necessarily on the number, so I'd probably be okay with the Planning Commission, you know, beating this up a little bit, but yeah, I don't know how 75, 80, 70, 90, I don't know how to make a difference in those numbers.
Thank you. Verna?
Yeah, I'm okay. I don't think we have anything right now that's over 75. So, yeah, I'm fine with the concept. See what happens, what the number comes out. But no, that sounds fine.
So I'm thinking that if it's 75, then that's a lot of people. That's going to be a big facility. So that goes right back to the spacing again that we might, those two kind of go together. 75 is a big facility, really. That's 75 people. And so how, then we got to think of back to spacing. If they were smaller, I was envisioning them being 25 people to 50. But then I don't know where my context is coming from. That's just a lot of people, 75 people. So it's like, are there 75 beds in this unit or what is it? So there again, then it would seem appropriate that maybe there was maybe only one in every quadrant of the city or something. So to me, those two sort of go together, size and spacing. So, but that also means to me that we just pass this through and have more discussion about that. So, Tom or Verna, do you have any other comments about that?
Just on the, 75, I mean, you're right. It could be, let's say they're families, right? So you've got three people, four people, kind of a building. I mean, 75 people can fit into a not very big place too. But, hey, to me, if we could have 75 people, that'd be great. I'm all for that. But I do agree that we need to have looking at, a limit, right? Because you don't want to turn into like a 2,000 bed place. I don't think we're big enough for that. We're not the size of some of our larger cities. So that's my only thought.
Okay. Anything else? So this one's going forward. Okay. Emergency services is next.
And that's just trying to be proactive about, I think in general, there can be concerns about additional calls for service for some of these facilities, for people who are, coming in a crisis kind of mode, and some of which may be suited to receiving services and some of which may not be ready for that yet. So just the idea that we would discuss with the shelter operator protocols for response for police and fire, and talking about having also a process where if we are getting a high number, that we have some kind of a resolution process set out.
Okay. Where am I? Verna? Is it your?
I don't know, but I'll go. Okay. And this reminds me of when we were looking at the motels and the calls for service and the what level, remember back in the day there? Up there on TIB. So yeah, I think this is important. So yes, I'm fine with this one.
Okay. Thank you. Tom?
I'm fine with this one. I think this is a great start and let's go from there.
Okay. And then number 8 on the next page is communication.
And just trying to set up a process for regular communication between the operators and, council or administration or however we choose to define that, but just again keeping that regular check-ins to make sure that things don't get beyond our level of comfort.
Tom, any thoughts?
Well, I think that's going down the right path, so that's a good way to start.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Verna?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, we already have reports on some of our the facilities that we have existing in the city now. So why not? It's fine.
Okay. All right. So that one goes through. And then the recommendation on this is to provide feedback, which we have done, which should be included in the draft ordinance to be reviewed by the Planning Commission. So you're just going to have to take it from here and we'll see it again. So, yes, Tom.
I do think this should not be done in a vacuum. So it really would be helpful to know what do we already have in our city. And I want to respect what Stacey brought up about maybe sometimes privacy. I'm all for that. But I really think it's important to know what do we already have, because I don't want to be making a decision and not have an understanding of what's already existing. So I just want to reiterate that. Thank you.
Right. And if you look at says, oh, go ahead, Verna.
Yeah. And I just want to say again that, like what Stacy said, there needs to be a way to provide that information to us. Because remember, what comes to us is public record. And I want to be very sensitive to our families and our kids out there that we have. So there's got to be a good way to do this without, you know, going, oh, hey, so-and-so lives right there. You know what I'm saying? So that's my big concern with all of this. But I think we can do it. There's a way to get that information and provide that information to us without invading people's privacy to a degree.
So that's part of our recommendation then. It says, what should be included in a draft ordinance? Well, that's not actually in the ordinance, but in the packet. We're saying in the packet, we would like to have that information. And you can start with the Planning Commission there. And we can take it from there.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. So now we're going to go back to item B. And that is a discussion about King County Health through Housing. And that's going to be Rachel is here. So Rachel, let's talk about that. And would you open that up with talking about how if 1220 has any impact on this Health through Housing program? So start. That's why we wanted to do this section.
I would be happy to. So thank you, first of all, for having me. Rachel Bianchi, for the record, Deputy City Administrator. So we're here just to remind you, this is our third discussion about the Health Through Housing program that King County is doing. To the committee chair's question, there's been some confusion as to whether 1220 and the preemption that's within 1220 affects the Health Through Housing program. And I just want to clear that up by saying it does not. So, and I'm going to read to you directly from King County's ordinance. It's 19236 relating to the Health Through Housing Implementation Plan. So the ordinance expressly says, quote, the siting process shall be in accordance with RCW 8214530 as now existing, as hereafter amended or superseded, including the consultation process if the facility proposed to be located within a city. The implementation plan shall require and describe the consultation process between the county and any city in which the county proposes a facility to be located to jointly identify and mutually agree upon suitable locations for eligible facilities to be purchased or constructed, and the services that will be provided to operate and maintain those facilities prior to the county entering into any contract or agreement to purchase or construct such facilities. So that's very clear. Also, the House Bill 1070, which is that RCW is referencing the law that 1070 turned out to be, right? That also stipulates that a county that imposes the tax under this section must consult with the city before the county may construct or acquire any of the facilities authorized in these subsections. So I just want to be really clear, this is a different process, right? The county is committed by state law, by ordinance, and by their own words that all of this has to be done with a willing city. So does that provide all of the clarity in terms of any concern about preemption around this issue?
So I have a comment about that, and that's just that HB 1070 says it must consult with the city, and so that's a little vague as far as whether or not the city is in agreement. But I think the King County ordinance makes it very clear by saying jointly identify and agree. So that if there happen to be any cracks in the other one, they're sealed by the King County ordinance.
Yeah, and that was work done by your colleagues from other cities on the RTC going through that process for that ordinance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So then let's go through the info memo.
Okay.
And then we'll
Again, this is our third discussion on this. You developed a series of questions on the Health Through Housing program. We did the first run at taking an answer or answering them. And then what you have attached to this memo today is the county's answers, which are, you know, took our answers and then just largely sort of provided some additional information where necessary. I think the crux of tonight's discussion is the fact that in the previous discussion, the most recent discussion with county staff, they clarified that the health through housing providers have indicated that they are only interested in using hotel properties that do not have outside entrances to hotel rooms. So many of us think motel, right? Motel has outside entrances. I think of the hotel in a box, right? There is a lobby that you walk through and there are interior corridors where you enter the hotel room from an interior corridor. To be clear, that is the only kind of properties that they are looking for this program, right? So that actually excludes a fair amount of properties within the city of Tukwila. And some that, you know, I have heard from different folks have been concerned about, right? So it really is going to lessen the number of hotels, properties, I should say. So I think the other key thing and that is in that ordinance, right, is that the county cannot acquire without permission of the city, right? But right now, honestly, we have no idea where there are any properties in Tukwila that meet their definitions because they also have a certain room cap that they're working under. This interior corridor, right? We have no idea if there's any willing sellers because that's the other part of this program is they are only looking for willing sellers. So it is staff's recommendation that we tell the county, go ahead and have your broker look to see if there are any willing sellers. Because really at this point, I think I shared this, you know, we're playing the what if game, right? And we don't really know if there's actually any possibility of this to move forward in the city of Tukwila, right? So staff suggestion is tell the county, go ahead, tell your broker to look and see if there are any of these properties available. That does not make us a willing city in any stretch of the imagination to just see if there are any properties on the market. If there are, then you will have some certainty about what we're talking about in terms of a potential program, potential impacts, all of that kind of stuff. And you have lots of opportunity in the future if there is a property for sale that meets their needs. And if there isn't, right, then this conversation is done and it's moot. So that's really the direction that we're looking for. I know that you may have some questions about the additional answers that the county provided, but from a staff level, we're sort of looking for that direction or not, right? We will take your direction. But it would allow us to perhaps have this conversation in a more concrete manner moving forward or not. So happy to answer any questions.
So I'll make one comment, and that is that if we do allow the county to go look around and see if there's any properties and they don't find any, we're going to be saving a boatload of staff time. And that's the thing that that really interests me is the fact that if it's a moot point, then we're done. If it's not a moot point, we got a whole bunch of questions that we need to go through later on, but we don't even need to address those questions today if we're just going to let them poke around, see if there's anything there, because if there isn't, which there might not be, then we're done. And if there are, then we can start going through these questions again and seeing, is this appropriate? Is this in the area? You know, is it up on TIB? We have a different, where is it? So I'll just add that. And this time I'm going to start with Verna.
Oh, I was so happy when I read this memo because we've been playing this what if game every time we talk about this because we don't know. So if allowing them to, allowing them to engage their broker to determine if there are any qualified properties in Tukwila for sale, and that does not put us on the hook to be a willing city, then why not? Right? Because let's say, like you said, they find nothing, then the whole thing is moot. Right? So to me, that makes a lot of sense. And so, like I said, when I read this memo, I went, yay, this is going to, I think this is where we need to be. And I'm glad that we're talking about this. So I'm very much in favor of this.
Thank you, Tom.
So I get a little concerned with letting the county's agent start talking to buyers, because on the one hand, that gives the appearance that we've started down the path. I hear what you're saying, that we're saying we haven't. But as I read through other parts of the questions, I don't feel like there's a lot of off-ramps once we start down the path. So would there be another way to find this information out without having their buying agent trying to contact sellers? I mean, I hear Kathy's point about not having staff do it. That would save some time. I mean, but couldn't we just hire a real estate consultant to say, why don't you look this up and tell us what the answer is so then we know without engaging the process further?
So two things come to mind. One is that this is how most of the other cities have begun the discussions with the county. We're one of the only, if not the only city that's sort of done it this other way. All the other cities have said, go ahead and look and then we'll talk, right? So let's have go look and then we'll talk about what could be, right? So your colleagues have done that in other cities in the county. I would also not recommend that we spend limited city resources, which, you know, we have very limited funds these days on doing this. The county has the funding to pay the broker. So let's say that the county came back and said, X property is interested in selling, right? You all then have lots of opportunity to have those discussions and move forward or not, right? So I don't even see this as getting on the ramp, on the freeway to begin with, right? This is just sort of trying to figure out if the road is there.
Okay. So if they found a building and the owner said, oh, yeah, I might be willing to sell, then it comes right back to us and we can start going through all those questions?
All of those questions and more. I would suggest that you're going to have even more questions, right? So you're going to want to know from the county who the operator is going to be. You're not just going to say at some point, yes, go ahead. You're going to want to know who the service provider is, right? You're going to want to know what the service provider's plan is. Some of those gates that you were just talking about in terms of shelters, so good neighbor agreement, code of conduct, police thing, those are all discussions you would have if the county came back and said, you know, yes, we found a potential property.
And okay, appreciate that. And then if there's no willing sellers or available units, it's the subject is just kind of dead for now. Could they revive it in 2 years? Because this program goes on for a long time.
I suspect that they're looking to spend their capital dollars as quickly as possible. So anything is possible, but I think they're looking to spend money now to get folks into shelter, into housing, right? So, okay. I mean, they've already announced, I think, as you know, right, they've announced partnerships with Seattle. There's one other jurisdiction that they've talked about so far, and they have other discussions in the works. So we are not the only city that they're looking at. And you know, county staff has relayed to me that, you know, we are just one of 39 cities, right? They are appreciative of the fact that this council decided not to go ahead and take the tax on its own. And so therefore, you know, the city of Tukwila is acting in a regional manner by having those taxes go to this regional effort. But, you know, I think it would be good if we just knew whether or not there was a path forward or not.
Okay, thank you.
So, I think you bring up a good point, and that is that when we say to King County, go forth and look, I think we should put like an end time on it, because if they find something next spring, then it's like we don't know what our load is or staff load or anything, and just say, you know, let us know now, this window closes in August or in sometime,
And then if you want to look again, let us know, because we got to gear up again if they want to do this. I'm not, I do have a whole bunch of questions that I don't want to have to just like keep on the back burner all the time. If they want to come back and say, all right, so we spent this round of funding, now we have more funding, and can we look in your city again? That's what I'd like them to do. And sure, maybe that's their intent, but I think it would be really good to have that on paper, and what that duration is, I don't know. But now I'm thinking about that based on what Tom said. Verna.
Yeah, can we put a time limit on it?
I'm sure we can, but they're bonding the proceeds of this tax, so it's not like they're going to have a windfall again in two or three years, right? They're bonding what they have now mm-hmm. in order to make large purchases. So I think it's unlikely that they would come back and say, in 2 years and say, we found a property, right? You can see in the answers to their questions, right? They have a sense of urgency about housing individuals who are currently living in our community, right? Outside. That's less of a concern to me, but I can certainly express that to county staff if that's what the council desires.
Tom?
I wouldn't mind it having a sunset for this round, and I don't know what that would look like. You know, are we saying 3 months, 6 months? You know, here's your window, see what you can find. If not, then we're going to set it aside for now and start to focus on some other things. Those times I just made up, it could be other time frames, but I wouldn't mind it having a sunset.
Verna?
Well, you know, I don't know if we can put like a sunset on it. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to be a pain, but because I'm thinking about what Rachel was saying, they want to move on this. They have a goal to house X amount of people quickly, right? And these are people in our community. So, and I think I'm just thinking if we say, okay, go ahead and engage, they're not going to just like wait 3 months to start that process. My feeling is that they would get right on it, right? And so we would know sooner rather than later if they did find something. I don't know. Rachel, what do you think? I mean, I
do think that, look, in my discussions with the county, with county staff, they are acting with a sense of urgency. I think we could say, go forth and look, but if you haven't found anything by the end of the year, we're sort of done with having this discussion. I think that's a reasonable thing to say, but I do have the feeling that they're moving as quickly as they can, again, to get our neighbors indoors.
Right. And I think I would be comfortable with that. You know, look, by the end of the year, I mean, you know, people are out there looking, you know, I mean, let's just use the real estate market for, you know, going out. I mean, everything is, people are moving on stuff like this. So I think if they found something, we would know within the next couple months, honestly, because I think you're right. There's a sense of urgency. So, but I would be comfortable by saying by the end of the year, I would be fine with that.
And I agree with that too. I would like to have if it's at later than that, then we need to reopen this discussion because we never know what's going to happen. It never know. So end of the year, and hopefully we would have a little bit more, they could get back to us. Also, we want them to get back to us and let us know now, and or they can also let us know if they're going to keep looking. Those are things we need to know. That's only fair for us to know that. So they come back and they say, so first we go to them and we say, okay, you got till the end of the year, but let us know what happens. They come back and they say, we couldn't find anything. We ask, are you going to keep looking? They say yes. And then we'll say, well, you know something, we've got processes in place and work plans. You got this much time. And then we need to reopen this and look at and see what's going on. So at least we know what's coming down the pike. So I think that January is generous. I think you're right that they're just going to do a round and they're going to be done. But it just gives certainty to everybody as to what expectations are. All right. So the question here is that the county is going, that we will say, staff, go ahead and talk to the county about having their broker look around and see if there's any place that's available. And then you'll tell them that our discussion about, let us know what you find. We really want this to be time delineated, just because bringing it up later, you might be sideswiping us when we're in the middle of a bunch of other stuff, or yeah, we need to know. So we can either do this or set it aside for a while.
Yep.
Okay. What time is it? All right.
Thank you.
Okay, Nora, can you do what you need to do in 5 minutes here?
Or should we no big news. This is really just more of a check-in. I wanted to let you know that we're continuing to work on things, continuing to make some progress. But again, you know, no big changes yet. We're working on hiring people. We've put things out. We've gotten some good applications back in, and we're going through that process, but it's going to take a little bit to actually get people on board and trained up, but we are moving in that direction. So not a lot to add, but I'm here if you had questions, I guess, in a pretty quick manner.
Yeah, Tom, any comments, questions?
No, I say keep doing the good work. Thank you.
All right, Berna?
Yep, I feel the same way. We're getting there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for this update. We do appreciate it. Yes, so we are on. Thank you again, Nora. I'm going to keep saying that because we did this. And we're on to our next meeting. So I'll see you guys in a few minutes.